All right, what's up, everybody? This is A7X Fan Ben, and this is Pirate CSG Podcast number 63. I'm extremely happy to address another awesome special guest who is Ethan Pasternak. Thanks a ton for coming on.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
Yep, awesome. So Ethan did a lot of the different prototyping and like styrene ship designs. So we've got an awesome questions list here. So we'll just get started with the first question. So how did you get involved with the whole WizKids Pirate CSG thing?
So yeah, I had been a graphic designer there for several years at this point, and I had ended up working directly for Jordan Wiseman on a number of new prototype projects. And one day he calls me into the office, into his office, and he has this cool little like pirate ship that he made out of a playing card, or he cut up some playing cards and made a little pirate ship model out. I was like, oh, that's really cool. He's like, okay, now check this out. And he holds up a credit card. It's like, this is the material. We can do this kind of stuff with it. And I had been the guy who was doing all of our packaging die lines and stuff like that because I was pretty technically minded. So he was like, I want to see what you can do. See, work me up some ideas for some prototypes for this. I'm like, okay, that sounds cool. And yeah, so I took his basic idea and started doing some ideas of how to do this stuff in styrene. And that was actually my first time ever dealing with styrene as a design medium. We'd only been using cardboard and stuff like that previous, so I had to learn a lot about how it worked. There are certain, tolerances and stuff like that you have to bear in mind because it's I was fascinated when he described the process of how they make it. I had assumed it would be cut or laser cut or something, and it's actually just punched. So there was all sorts of neat stuff that I had to learn for it, but that was like it was like, hey, check this out. And he also kind of he had these all these little Legos, Lego ships on the table, that he had been playing around with the design team. He's like, yeah, we got a game design going for it here, but I need to figure out how to do this with styrene. And so I went to work at that. It's fun.
Nice. Yeah, so that must have been, was that like 2003? That kind of leads into the next question on like how the shift from Lego to styrene happened. It must have been
Yeah, I mean
pretty
it
early.
was after it must have been obviously it was after the James and Mike pitched the game to Jordan. I'm not sure exactly when that was. Honestly, ironically, all of the email was actually kept and used later in for various legal reasons. But I actually don't have any of that on me, so I don't remember exactly when it was. But 2003 sounds about right. I started with WizKids in late 1999. No, sorry. Early 2000, late. Hold on, no. I moved over here in 99. I started at WizKids in late 2001 because it was right after I had come back from vacation and ended up being right after September 11th. And I ended up working contract for a little while. But yeah, so it was probably 2003 when this happened.
Okay,
Okay.
nice. So was it like kind of a tough shift figuring out how to go from Lego to like the styrene with like the curvature of the hulls and whatnot?
Well, I mean, as I said, I didn't really go from the Lego to anything. Like I saw the Legos that had been there, and so he was like, once we figured out that we could indeed do the design, Jordan came up with the original idea of curving the hulls of the ship. It was a pretty straightforward leap, right, to take because he had played around with literally a set of playing cards and just cut them up and made some cool little. I think it was a three-masted ship. Kind of basic, didn't have a lot of the level stuff that we did in styrene, but yeah, he had this cool little thing he'd put together with tape and glue. But yeah, it was definitely different than anything I'd worked on before. Coming from cardboard, which you can't really bend very well without doing scoring, and then it only bends on an angle, so it's harder to curve cardboard, obviously, because it's flexible, but it breaks. Its tensile strength isn't that great.
Yeah, makes sense.
But you can do it.
How did the process work for prototyping ships?
So, I came up with the designs in I used Adobe Illustrator because I was a graphic designer. So that was the closest thing to a CAD program that I had, and I was a master of Illustrator. So I just working with an Adobe Illustrator, working at like 100% scale, where I could actually just say, all right, I need this to be 18 millimeters long by 3 millimeters wide, or whatever. Just working at a one-to-one scale in Illustrator, I would come up with the dies. And then we'd arrange, I'd have to arrange them onto a card to make sure we could actually, you know, create the product and know how many cards I had designated for the ship. Also leaving room on the top for the guys to have their flavor text and their rules text and stuff. But I would print them out on paper. I started out kind of trying to figure out how best to simulate 0.9 millimeter styrene. So I had to figure out a way to simulate 0.9 millimeter styrene, because at first, like, I had a couple blank styrene cards and I started trying to cut out, like, use them and like spray mount them on there and then like cut them out and then just take it off. It didn't work because styrene doesn't cut, it splits. So it was pretty impossible to work with. So I started using paper and cardstock. And what I would do is I'd take this nice glossy photo paper that I would print out the dial line on, with the lines all nice and thin. And then I would laminate that using spray mount. I would go in and spray the back of it and laminate it onto like the, it was actually the thick paper that came in every pack of printer paper. It was like the really thick cardboard, like cardstock. It wasn't meant to be used, but I would go around to the printers and steal all of those pieces of cardstock and bring them back there. And that became my supply. And honestly, for the life of my tenure at WizKids, I kept using that stuff because it kept coming in all of the photo paper. So I would just confiscate all of the backer sheets. But anyway, so I'd spray that on to one of those backer sheets, and that made a 0.9 millimeter thick strata. It was thick paper, so it bent pretty similarly to styrene. And I was able to just cut them out with an X-Acto knife by hand and then put them together. And I would go to the trouble of like curving all the corners and everything to make sure that they were as close to the actual final design as possible. But it was always a paper design first. And then once it was confirmed that it could be put together and worked and it looked right, we'd send it off to our partners in China, and they would do their analysis on it, round the corners a little bit more because they had particular tolerances, and make sure that there wasn't anything too messed up in the die, nothing too close together so it would split, all that kind of stuff. And then they would send us back some just bare white unprinted prototypes, and so we'd get those back, put them together, and they worked because we had spent a lot of time doing those hand prototypes.
Nice.
And yeah, that was the way I did it all the way up until we shut the doors.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Were you creating any dies yourself? Like the little hand crank ones and things like that?
There was always a manufacturer in China that was actually doing the final production. And we would just, the stuff we would do was all, like, if I had it to do today, I'd have a 3D print.
I'd
3D print the pieces in the right kind of plastic. But that technology wasn't even a glimmer in our eye at that point. So,
yeah.
But no, it was always paper prototypes, and then it was sent off for the final die proofs, because you didn't get a die back and a proof back until they actually made the tool. So it was kind of too late to make any big changes. They could do some small tweaks, but because it was a piece of physical tooling that went into a die cutting machine, so by the time it was made and we got whites back, there really wasn't much to be done unless there was something catastrophically wrong. And usually the partner was very good about saying, hey, this is not going to work. You need to change something about this. And they'd send back a prototype of what they want to change. And like, hey, we need to do this, that, and the other thing. And then we'd change it and send it back. Or they'd just change it themselves sometimes.
Yep. Okay, nice. Did you create any ship types in a computer program first, or was it all like drawings on paper and then just cutting them out?
Always in a computer first. Okay. I started in Illustrator. Oftentimes, like especially at the beginning when I like had to go, you know, I had to figure out what these ships would look like. You know, I didn't necessarily have in my head what a two-masted or three-masted schooner was, or what that looked like compared to a bark or a brigantine or all these other kinds of ships. So I went to the internet and looked up different kinds of ships and got different profiles and brought pictures into Illustrator to use as like an outline cut, and then I would size it down to the right size and start trying to figure out how to, because you never make anything exactly like it looks in real life with styrene. It's an interpretive medium. So, you know, you'd make whatever kinds of compromises with the design you needed to make. But it usually started from, you know, I had a profile and like some different views of ships and stuff. And but yeah, it was all started in Illustrator, finished in Illustrator. I was a very digital designer at the time.
Yeah, nice. What was the typical timeline for making sure prototypes could be mass produced? Like, I know Mike Mulvihill talked about a lead time for the sets being up to a year. And then I imagine prototypes would have to be in that range.
Yeah,
somewhere.
We had to do physical tooling. So yeah, it took a long time to make those dies and get everything into production. And because once we got the dies finished, then the graphic design stuff started and the graphic design folks would go through and they had to iterate all these. They had to do the layouts on the cards. Text had to come in from game design. So like from starting a new set, yeah, it took like a year to bring it to production. The styrene component of that started almost immediately. Because it was one of the first things we needed to figure out is, right, what new ships are we going to have available in this set? I wasn't involved in the collation and like how the dies were laid out and stuff like that. In this product, I was in the Star Wars game, but not in Pirates. And so I don't know exactly how they used the dies, how they controlled rarity and that kind of stuff. Really wasn't my my department, but
yeah. Interesting. I'm wondering about if there were any designs that you made prototypes for that the factory basically said, no, we can't do it, or like, this won't work on that size card.
No, we because we were making them up by ourselves by hand first. I was making them by hand myself because I was the only styrene guy until very late in the Pirates run. Yeah. I was making them by hand and basically doing a proof of concept right there. The worst that would happen would they'd come back and say, hey, these corners need to be more rounded in the die because it requires a 0.2 millimeter rounding on all corners. Otherwise it'll crack, because it's not, like I said, it's not cut, it's punched. So they have basically the die is two pieces. There's a male piece and a female piece. And they put a piece of blank styrene in between over the female piece and smash the male piece down on it. It smashes the pieces out and then pushes them back up. Because on the female piece, it actually has the opposite to push the pieces back in as well. So, and then it pushes it back in place and then it's ready. It's truly bizarre. I never would have conceived of that as a way to make equivalent of puzzle pieces, but it makes sure that the styrene breaks and doesn't, a cut might actually remove material and things wouldn't fit again. It wouldn't be continually the right angle, all that kind of stuff. The punch like shocks the material, breaks it in exactly the right way they want. And it works perfectly. So once we had we had some back and forth with some of the designs in terms of the size of pieces. Oh, the oars need to be longer because the pieces can't be that thin, or the flags, like that's the thinnest you can possibly make a flag for the pennants. I originally had the pennants a lot thinner, but it looked cool, but they couldn't make a piece of styrene that thin or it would crack. So yep. Then we had to have them everything, like nothing could be smaller than 2 millimeters. It could come to a point. But it had to be a rounded point, and it had to like have meat to it that was at least 2 millimeters wide. So, but yeah, we never had anything rejected because we worked pretty closely with the styrene folks to make sure we were getting their tolerances right.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to hear about the dies, how there was like a female piece underneath and how the styrene would kind of go through and then come back up. That's new to me.
Never understood how they got the pieces back in until they told me, like, no, there's actually then another male piece underneath it that pushes back through. I'm like, what?
Wow.
That's insane. Yeah. Who figured that out?
Man. Yeah, that's more complicated than I was aware of. Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it was
pretty insane. And when I was working on the Star Wars game, which I was much more heavily involved in all the pieces of that, because that was my original design, I actually got to go to China and talk with the styrene guy there. And there weren't that many people who did this stuff with styrene, or that weren't that many factories. So like the number of people who were considered experts on styrene like could be counted on one or two hands tops, like in the world at the time. And I got to meet one of the guys, and like we sat there on a whiteboard and like drew stuff out and talked together. We had to have a translator because his English wasn't that great and I had no Chinese. So, but like we just like went back and forth talking about stuff and like figuring things out. And it was really cool because like, he was pleased that somebody on our side of the fence knew enough about it that he didn't have to correct me.
Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, it was a very specialized and very bizarre thing. Yeah. Such a weird medium to work in, but it was so much fun.
Yeah, that's really cool. So other than Adobe Illustrator, what other computer programs did you use, whether for graphic design or the prototyping?
Sure. For it was all, like I said, prototypes all Illustrator. The die line design was all Illustrator. The skinning of the ships and stuff was Photoshop. And they would do that. We do that a piece of time. I did prototype skins for all the ship designs in the first set, and probably like, and we didn't introduce new dies very often. It was only like one or two new ship types per, or only a few new ships per set.
Yep.
So I think I did some prototype art for some of those. By the time we got down to like the Barbary Coast stuff and the, especially once we got down to the Sea Monsters, I really wasn't involved in the graphic design at all, because I had been moved over to the game design group. And the only graphic design thing I was still doing was stacking. That was actually why we ended up getting Daryl Russwold on staff, was because they made me choose between game design and graphic design and styrene design. And so I was like, okay, fine, but I have to train somebody to do this. And so they gave me Daryl, and Daryl turned out to be a perfect perfect apprentice for it, because he was great. And he ended up doing a lot of the stuff in the last two sets for Pimax.
Yep. Interesting. Were there, in terms of the programs used in like files, was there ever any conflict between what you use versus what the factory could handle? Like, I don't know if it was all PDF or.
No, we used EPS files. We save things down to EPS format, which is a generic vector format that works in just about everything, including CAD. So what I'm pretty sure they were using a CAD program of some kind in China. All I know is that they requested them in EPS and we had no problem delivering it.
Okay, nice. If the game was made today and you were in charge of styrene aspect of it, what tools would you prefer to use, if any differences?
It would. The only thing I would change is our prototyping method. I would really want to use a 3D printer.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to put that together and make a quick, you know, it wouldn't even need to be like a full-on 3D file. I'd still use the same thing to design. I'd still use Illustrator because that's my wheelhouse. But for output, instead of cutting it out by hand, as useful as that skill set was, I'd rather not do it. It was a pain. It was imprecise. I'd much rather get it exact and just bring that into like a 3D program and extrude it exactly 0.9 millimeters, and then print,
yep.
You know, and just have all the pieces there, put them together, and behold, you have a new ship.
Yeah. Yeah. The 3D printing is pretty amazing. So,
yeah. And it worked perfectly for this, because it makes everything like from the top. When you look down at something, the each layer is perfectly smooth.
Yep.
It's the layers that make the striations. And since we're printing everything flat, it would have been perfect.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I've got some 3D printed ships, and sometimes it's kind of finicky getting them to work, but once they come out nice, they're pretty close to the originals. So it's pretty great.
Yeah.
Were there any difficulties when some of the ships started being produced on one card instead of two or three cards, such as like the mega card ships?
That was actually a tremendous relief to get the big ships. Like when we did the Bauchuan, the promotional, I think the promotional ship, the Bauchuan one, was the first one, right?
Yep. Yeah. The first one with those huge cards. Yep.
The first big card ship was the Bauchuan. And that was a relief to work in. And we actually carried that forward into the Star Wars game, where we started producing stuff on big cards because it was a lot easier to deal with. They were like, hey, we could make bigger cards for you. And we're like, okay, well, how big? So they showed us the sizes. And they could actually make a card that was like, I think it was like 6x9 or something was the biggest they could do in their die machine. And we're like, that's a little too big.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what about this? We just made it the size of two cards, and it worked great.
Yeah.
The same tolerances applied, everything, all the mechanics are the same. It's just we had much more leeway in terms of the layout, just because it was more space. I had already cut my teeth working in a much smaller environment and cramming everything in together. And remember, you had to make sure everything was at least 2 to 3 millimeters apart, or the piece in between might crack. So it was during the punching process, so you had to be really careful. And that included the edge of the card. So there was a lot of, everything was really crammed together and weird. And you also had to make sure that the artists could had enough space to where, because printing on this stuff was not super, super precise. Like the registration, I don't know how much ink, traditional paper printing you've ever worked with before, but registration is always an issue with your medium. And depending on what kind of paper, what kind of surface you're printing on, the registration refers to how closely the print will align to where you intended it to be on the paper.
Yep.
Like when you're dealing with four color printing, it's like, okay, how close is the cyan, magenta, yellow, and black layer working? So there's not like the little blaze you see where there's like a yellow highlight on one side and a red highlight on the other or whatever. It's because the yellow is shifted the wrong way. And it was a four-color printing process, so the registration color to color was great, but overall, like, making sure it was printed on exactly the right part of the card was really difficult. So we had to leave enough room between the cards for the punching process, or between the pieces on the card for the punching process and for the printing process, to make sure they left enough room, they had enough bleed around the edge of each ship.
Yep.
So that even if it shifted a little, it still looked cool. But it was, everything just got an order of magnitude easier once we were able to use the bigger cards. We still crammed them on pretty tight, but with more space, you know, came more opportunity to do longer pieces and bigger ships, and that by its nature sort of made things a lot easier.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was easier for people to put together too.
Yeah. Yeah. They do, sometimes the pieces pop out of the cards easier too, which can be good or bad, but yeah, definitely. So
more flex.
Yep. For some of the ship designs that had rules integrated in their physicality, like the keyword, like ship type keywords, which came first, the rules or like the physical design?
The physical design pretty much always came first, because we'd work with the game design team at the very beginning of coming up with a new set and being like, all right, have some ideas for some new ships. What do you guys think? And they're like, well, can you do X, Y, or Z? Be like, oh yeah, check it out. And then, you know, spend a couple of days iterating on something and then throw them an idea. But, you know, oftentimes as I would work on a new ship design, I'd have something in the back of my head, a cool idea. And I'd just like mock it up and throw it over on off the printed page and come back to it later. But like anything that had a physical component, like there was a ship that had a big hook on the front that you could like, attached to another ship, like that mechanic entirely came from the fact that the ship had a hook on the front that you could attack another ship with.
Yeah.
That came from the design. Honestly, some of the original basic game mechanics came from the design, which.
Interesting.
It contributed a lot to the differences between the Lego version that was first pitched and the final styrene version that came out. Like, I actually ended up sparking some pretty heated arguments at one point when everyone was still involved in the process before it had been completely handed off to Mike and the design team. I ended up having an argument with James about something to do with how the, because originally the game had arcs that were supposed to be printed on the pieces, so that you could change the arcs that the cannons had.
Okay.
But once I actually tried to make that work on the actual physical deck of the card, there was really no good way to do it. And they didn't want to have any accessory pieces that like were, okay, you have to have a card that you can use to determine your arc. You just put it in the, they didn't want to have any extra pieces. So we made the decision like, okay, well, what if, so I had one mocked up and I'm talking to Mike and we're like, okay, well, what if we just like let the size of the mast itself dictate the arc? Like if you can see past, you know, from the mast, if you can have a clear line of fire from the mast to a ship, you can hit it with that mast. And we'll have each mast have its own cannon thing. And that was what we ended up going with, to where like having really wide sails was actually kind of a bad thing, because it meant that you had the cannon, the mast behind it had a hard time hitting, right?
Yep.
So like that whole mechanic ended up coming from the design, not from the original, from the physical design, not from the original conceived design, where you could control it. And the original conceived design was a good idea, because it allowed you to have, oh hey, this ship can have a 360 degree arc, that'll just be a lot like a turret or whatever, right? But that the way we ended up having to do it, that would only work if you had a cannon on a little turret up on top, which was kind of a realistic way to go, so it worked out. But yeah, that's the interplay between the physical design and the design of the ships, the game design, very much leaned on the physical design, and so the physical design often came first in terms of mechanics. I'm pretty sure there were times when game design asked, hey, can we do a thing like this, and we're like, yeah, sure, and came up with a thing. But
okay, nice. Do you remember any like specific ship types where Mike Mulvihill may have come up with like an idea and then he asked you if you could make it?
Well, I mean, Mike like did all of the designs for the, I mean, sorry, the team led by my point of contact was mostly Mike. They did the designs of the game. Like I contributed to it because of the physical design, but you know, it was all them. And like the theming of the set would come down and be like, okay, here's what we can, like for Frozen North, they're like, okay, we're going to do Viking stuff. Like, oh, cool, we can do Viking ship. And, oh, we can do icebreakers. And I don't remember if particularly which came first in those. The only one I remembered that came first the other direction was the hook.
Yeah. Okay, the hoist.
Definitely, like, check this out. And they're like, ooh, cool. We got to put that in the game.
Yeah. Nice. I love the logical order in which the ship stat cards appear on the deck plates. Was there any internal debate or decision-making when it came to displaying that? Like the cannons before, the cannons last, or the cargo after mast or whatever?
Wow, the graphic design project. I did the initial prototyping of the graphic design before turning it over to Shane. To do most of the implementation, and then eventually Shane's team, because he ended up becoming the art director and had people that he was able to work with to get all that stuff done. But I honestly don't remember the process by which those stats came about, like where they were and stuff like that. I know game design had a good amount of say in how things were laid out, but so did the physical shape of the card. You had pieces you needed to punch out, so you only had a small window to put all the stuff in. I actually don't have any of the cards handy to look at. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this I worked pretty heavily with Mike on getting this basically out. We developed the iconography together. I think we went through two or three iterations of it before we came with something that we liked. And obviously Sandra, our art director, was heavily involved. Shane was also involved, because like he was going to end up doing a lot of the I had come from graphic design, but I was working with Jordan and his little Skunkworks group. So I had at that point kind of been taken out of Sandra's group, but I was still sitting over there with them. We were working well ahead of production. So the graphic design team worked on stuff that was officially in production and going to print. And I worked on the stuff before it got there. So all of the original design stuff was stuff that I laid out. And then I turned it over to their team and they took what they liked from what I had done, and just kept iterating based on that. So like, I'm pretty sure I actually did this layout and the design for this one myself, the Titan. But yeah, we knew we needed to have a list of what each of the cannon stats were, whether they were long or short. I had been a graphic designer at this point for like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, pretty early in my career. So we came up with that on the graphic design side, working with Mike to make sure that it worked, obviously.
Nice. Were there any ever alternative designs for the fort concept, such as like a bigger fort or a different shape than the square?
No, the fort design was kind of a like, I had done it on a whim, like thinking it would be pretty cool to have forts. And so I just kind of made one and everybody liked it. And so they were like, yes, we'll do a fort. And the problem with the fort is that it was really heavily dictated. How big it could be was dictated by the size of the card. And one of the regrets I have of this game is that we didn't go back and make any cooler forts once we had bigger cards.
Okay. Yep.
At that point, the forts weren't that big a part of the game. They were more of a big part of the game in the early sets. And by the time we had big cards, like the Bausch one size cards, nobody wanted to waste the real estate on a fort, since it was supposed to be a ship combat game. I would like to have done some, but I can see why they didn't, you know.
yeah. I'll show you.
I'd be surprised if Daryl hadn't come up with any concepts for different forts as well. Once he was in charge of the styling stuff.
Yeah, maybe I can ask him at some point.
He never ran any past me. Even after I was forced to give up my role actually executing the styrene, all of Daryl's stuff had to get past me. I was the styrene Nazi of the group, so they didn't want to lose my perspective on it. They just didn't want to have me splitting my time doing the Star Wars game design stuff and doing the dial-ins.
Yeah, interesting. I'm gonna send you a picture. Something that some people have done and that I plan to do in future campaign games is have a fort that uses extra walls from like four forts or whatever. So then you can make like a giant one in the middle.
Oh man, 10 cool points to whoever came up with that. That is awesome. Bashing forts. I freaking love it, man. That's great.
I love forts too. They're so fun, and they're actually like really strategically and tactically useful too a lot of times. So
Totally, yeah. I'm actually kind of ashamed that I never thought of doing that. Using multiple fort cards together to make one fort.
yeah, and I mean it's
You have innovated beyond our original design. Good job.
yeah it's pretty fun. How did the process for creating the 10 massive junk type work, like the Bouchwan?
It was, I mean, we had already done junks. I'd done several different sizes of junks, and so it was basically take the when we had I had Mike had shown me some also the cool historical stuff about the old Chinese treasure ships and how huge they were, and there were some artist renderings of what they looked like, and I don't, nobody has a picture. So what we I basically just they're like, we want to do one of these. I'm like, okay, can I go nuts with the masts? And they're like, yeah, go for it. Make it as big as you want. So they gave me the big cards to work with, and I ended up coming up with a way that would look cool and have 10 masts. And they're like, yes, this is perfect. We'll take it from here. And then they went nuts with the mechanics, and it turned out to be a pretty fun piece to play with.
Yeah, they're pretty. They've had a remarkable impact on the game and collectors and players alike. So
I'll bet.
nice.
And they're really good looking ships too.
Yeah. Oh,
Again, the
exactly.
bigger you get, with the model, the cooler it gets to look.
Yep.
So being able to make a ship that was this much bigger than the other ones was just fun.
Yeah, they stand out for sure. So all of the ship designs were your idea except for like the hoist one. I think all of them are on that page.
Yeah, I hadn't gotten quite down to the bottom yet. I was still on. I got it on a bigger monitor now. But yeah, I was still doing the designs when we started making sea monsters and junks and Viking ships. Viking set might have been one of the last ones that I did without help. Yeah, I remember I
Nice.
did the crab. The crab was fun.
Yep.
Everybody thought I was nuts for trying to do the crab. I'm like, no, check it out. It'll roll. All right, that is kind of cool.
Yeah, they're pretty wild for sure.
Sea dragon, that was a fun
Nice.
one too.
Yeah.
I did the catamaran. I did the outrider one. The longer wind catcher ships, the more fantastical ones. Working on getting
Nice.
down to the bottom. Sorry, I'm loading a little slow.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm looking for one of the ones with a hook, because that
Yeah,
was one of the last ones that I did.
there's like middle towards the bottom, there's the scorpion, but then
A
yeah,
scorpion, yes.
the hoist one is towards the top, second row, fourth from the right, hoist three. So
Turtle ship. I had so little to do with the graphic design after the first set that, like, every time I see some of the cool designs that the guys came up with for that, it just cracks me up every time. Like when they're
similar.
awesome. They started to get really. At first, we were all slavishly faithful to what ships actually looked like, and we started getting kind of crazy with things like purple sails and like just big, very colorful junks that because we could, and especially once we got down into doing the Disney stuff, we had a lot more high res textures that we could use for stuff, and because we came up with all those just using Photoshop to mimic it, to fake little cannons, and so it was neat to have real pictures of actors and characters and stuff, and the Pirates of the Caribbean one.
Yeah, it was fun talking to Shane Harley about the artwork and how it kind of evolved and whatnot. Definitely got kind of more wild as the sets went on, so.
Totally, totally. The beast, the one that was just tentacles coming up. That was a fun one.
Yeah, the Kraken, yep.
Second again.
Kraken and Squid.
Yeah.
Nice. I imagine Darryl Rustfold may have done the turbine, the one at the bottom with like the it's got like the wheels on the sides kind
Yeah,
of
I
thing.
think he did. I think I. Yeah, there's okay. There's the scorpion. I remember having a lot to do with that one. The little buoy, the death, the flotilla.
Yeah, Switchblade from Fire and Steel. I don't know if that was Daryl or not, but
Fire and Steel was Daryl's baby. And I was just kind of taking a look at him and proving him. Yeah, the grinder, the turbine ship. Yeah, he came up with that one. That was pretty cool. We still had meet like I was still in the meetings with him when we were coming up with new ship designs and stuff like that. But he did the design work for that one, and that might have been one of the first ones he took from design all the way through to production with only having like approval from me, which is pretty cool.
nice.
They grow up so fast.
Yeah. Were
No,
there
it was
ever
really good having Daryl on board. He was a great designer, and he turned out to be just as interested in the mechanical stuff as I was. Yeah, the Bombardier, the one with the big flame thing on front. We did that one after I had started doing the Star Wars one, the Star Wars game, where we had these little fire trails that you would attach to ships to indicate that they'd been hit, and like we kind of rolled with it for the flamethrower ship.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, some people actually use the flames from the Star Wars game to denote which masts are out for the Pirates game.
Oh, nice. So they don't
So,
have to take the masts off. That's cute.
yeah. So,
I like that. Mix and
yeah.
match, baby. Yeah, the Star Wars game is my baby. If you ever know anybody looking for the kitty the scoop on those ones, that's I'm all over that. Ah, the
Nice.
sickle, yeah, I remember that. The cool one because we worked on the gears for that. Worked out the gear idea for that.
Yep.
With the little central mast that it rolls around. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
The switchblade.
Yeah, those are interesting in gameplay. They get pretty crazy too.
I imagine they cause all sorts of weirdness. Because remember, like we were making these in absence of the rules.
That's
We
wild.
didn't have game rules of how they were going to be used. We're just like, hey, we got this cool idea. Here's a thing. And they're like, they move one and the other one moves. We're like, ooh, okay, this is cool. But you guys as the players are the ones who are like, man, these things stick out way to the left, like way to each side. They mess with how like you can't get up close to the ship on the side because there's this thing in the way or whatever. Like it causes all sorts of unforeseen problems that we had no idea about. I'm sure Mike and company thought about those because they did a lot of play testing, but they didn't really get to play test with physical pieces all that often for the new ship designs. So.
Nice. Fascinating stuff. Were there ever any material issues when making ship designs with special characteristics, such as like the translucent ones or glow in the dark and glittery stuff?
Yeah, the transparent styrene, like we started trying to do stuff with that, and it has a very different tolerance. It's actually not quite the same thickness. It wasn't exactly the same. That's why the pieces don't fit quite the same way. And yeah, it's a little more bendy, which is nice because it makes the ship pieces bend easier. But yeah, it was problematic to work with. It wasn't exactly the same. It's a plastic is weird. It's not like paper, which is all made basically the same way. It's just a matter of like what finishes you're throwing on it. Like the different kinds of plastics, the styrene that we're used that we used the basic like credit card styrene is industry standard. It's a basic thing. As soon as you go to transparent, it's got very different properties. It's made a different way. It's not made of the same exact chemicals. So the printing process works different, of course, because you need to use transparent inks, not opaque ones, at least where you want transparency. So yeah, we tried out transparent styrene on a number of things. I don't know how it got used in any products. I just remember experimenting with it and being like, oh God, this is different. We might need different dyes for this.
Yeah,
And I remember
interesting.
then looking for exactly 0.9 millimeter transparent styrene because the stuff we got originally was 0.8. We're like, that's a lot. That's way too expensive to redo all of our dyes for a 0.1 millimeter difference.
Yeah, especially because it was only for like some specific ships, like some of the super rares and whatnot. So,
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot to be said for making sure that you use everything as much as you can when you're talking about physical tooling for a game like that, especially for collectibles. Like the last thing you want to do is because the tooling for this was not cheap. It was hundreds of thousands of dollars to make the physical dies for every set, and so you budget for it when you're building the set, and you make sure you sell enough to cover for it. But yeah, it was you didn't want to create a die line for one specific thing. That's why you ended up having
we tried to reuse the Bausch Long die line as much as we could, rather than just have it for one thing. And so there are lots of different versions of it. That's the beauty of the printing thing, is that you can have the same die and print it in 20 different ways, and it's 20 different ships. It's like you do with cards in collectible card games. It's all the same die.
Yep. Nice. Do you know if that was the translucent stuff was your idea or someone else on the graphics team?
We got samples of materials from time to time when somebody would go to China for a factory visit and come back with some neat stuff, and we'd all look at it and go, ooh, ah, and like, oh, I wish it was thicker. We were like, yeah, we want to do, no, there was no one person who said, you know what, it would be cool if we did transparent styrene. It was like, we had some transparent styrene. Everybody was like, ooh, let's do that.
Okay, like, nice.
The wants to work with different materials were all obvious. There were a few times when we'd look at something and be like, yeah, we can't do that. Because it would require whole new tooling or it wouldn't work in our distribution method or whatever. There were different physical reasons you could or couldn't do things.
Yeah.
You know, there's the hoist. The hoist, that was Daryl. That was a great one that Daryl did.
Yeah. Do you know if some of those materials that didn't work were like more tough or brittle, like metal or something?
Yeah, that was the kind of thing. Like there was some styrene materials that were too bendy, that didn't hold a straight line. So like you'd have a mast, but it would be like bent over, like
yeah.
We had worked too long in pre-painted plastic minis to want to have bendy pieces in our styrene game. Like the rigidity, like it was almost like working with ABS, which we had always wanted to work with in our minis games, but we'd never been able to afford to. So we didn't want to sacrifice that rigidity. Some of them were too rigid, they were too brittle. Like I said, we'd occasionally get material samples and we'd play with stuff and see if there was anything to be had by switching. I think the only thing we ever got to do was the transparent stuff, right? I think we did some glow in the dark ones.
Yeah, just two different ships from some of the later sets, a couple cursed ships.
Yeah. We never got to do it like on large scale as far as I can remember, but it was definitely something that we would do for promos because, hey, if it's a promo, it doesn't necessarily have to be
full production.
Full production were ready.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean by the styrene that's too bendable. I accidentally bought soft PLA for my 3D printer once, and the thickness was fine, but yeah, it's just the ships, they just fall apart as soon as you put them in the slots and whatnot. So
it's like all those different kinds of strata have their place, but if you use the wrong one in the wrong place, it just makes everything worse.
Yeah. What do you think was the hardest ship type for you to create? If you remember like a specific one.
I don't know. Looking back at my entire career doing styrene, the pirates was always a refuge because they were relatively simple. Because by the time we were, I don't know, three sets into pirates, I was already working on the early prototypes of the Star Wars game, and the Star Wars game has way, way more complicated ships that I had to put together because you don't have this nice, safe, everything has to float on the sea kind of thing. I remember the Bausch one was an interesting challenge just because we were able to have so many pieces but still needed to make it kind of fit to scale with the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
I think the first time working with a movable piece was entertainingly difficult, trying to figure out how to do hinges and stuff. But, that was stuff that we took in for the Star Wars game and had, like, the squid ship. Asajj Ventress's squid ship, I forget the thing's called, which had four articulated tentacles. So like we figured it out. Pirates often was a proving ground for technology that would get used elsewhere. I think the Bausch one was probably the most challenging just because it was the most pieces and it was the most real estate to worry about.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was mostly Daryl who was working with it, so I might have a different perspective on those.
Yeah, interesting. Were there any surprises when a prototype would be kind of easy to build when you thought it might be difficult?
Because I built them by hand with paper, it was always easier to build them once they came back in styrene.
Yeah. Okay, so, that makes sense.
I would have made the original paper mock-ups a couple months before, so I'd probably still have them on my desk, you know, and because I was pretty proud of those things, and I would collect them and display them and stuff. And yeah, so no, they were always pretty easy to put together. Probably to the game's detriment over time, because, you know, just because it was easy for me to make doesn't mean it was easy for everybody to make, right? And like I got in trouble a couple times in Star Wars making like the tauntauns that were just ridiculous and people would curse at me because they were really tiny pieces. But for me, dealing with an X-Acto knife all day long and cutting these things out by hand, it was like, oh, no problem, it works. So, learn things over time. Customer feedback's important.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder about the two-masted junk design. It should be on the top right of the design page with all the shapes. If that one was kind of easy at first.
Yeah, these guys.
Yeah, like the top right two-masted junk. I don't know if this happened in prototyping or if it was more a factor of like the mass production made it harder to put together than it was for you. It's like that quarter deck, the back deck with the slanted hull sides.
Yeah, because I had designed that piece that sticks up off the main hull to bend more, and that's why there's that cutout there, so it would bend more to give, because junks had a very signature, like heavily raised and very narrow piece on the back, and it would often be narrower than the deck underneath it. So I used that as a way to make it smaller. But that made it more hard to put together. I kind of felt bad about that once that went out. But it looked really cool, so like
yeah.
There's always that trade-off between what looks cool and what's easy to put together. I remember that. That was probably the cruelest I think I was to be. No, well, maybe. The Nautilus, the submarine one, had some really kludgy little pieces as well, because you had to put a piece on top of another, like of a curved piece that was already on a bottom, whereas all the rest of them, you only had to curve it once. So the submarines were actually harder to put together for me than almost anything else. I think the Switchblade, when we were putting that together, was a little difficult because you had to line line the gears up correctly and...
Yeah, it's useful to have the main deck flush with the hull, so that way the gears don't mismatch the overlap. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you definitely have to do things in order.
Yep.
And I made all of the illustrations of the pieces, the little 3D like these, the images like these. I made those all in Illustrator.
Okay. Nice.
By just taking them and turning them at the right exact turning and squishing them exactly the right way, and all the pieces that were like that to squish the right way, and then manually curving stuff that needed to curve, like it was a nightmare. The little IKEA instructions were all my doing. I did all of those.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. Yeah, you had first-hand knowledge of like the best way to build it in the specific order.
I had the actual die line, so I could take each piece and display it, and put it the right way, squish it, intersect it with the other pieces. I knew what to remove, what to keep there, how they would interact. And I was also still the most technical graphic designer we had. So I was the one in charge of doing all of those until Daryl came up with a better way. Like, I think Daryl started using a 3D program when he took over, because he wasn't nearly as devoted to Illustrator as I was. I think he ended up using, I don't know if it was 3D Studio or not, but I'm pretty sure he was using a 3D program to do his prototyping. He was a little faster at it over time, I think, than I was.
Nice.
But definitely made the diagrams easy to do.
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So I'm curious if you designed the giant scale ships that were at the Gen Con 2007.
Dude, I built those by hand.
Oh my God. Nice.
Yeah, I went, there was a print shop down the street, and I would go down there. I had them all printed out on large format. I blew up the die line. I blew up the die lines to where so what it was is we knew what size foam core I could find. So we found quarter inch foam core. And I'm like, okay. And I blew the designs up to where instead of 0.9 millimeters thick, they were half inch thick. So the way they were the same thickness, I just blew them up. And then I laid them out on 3 foot wide paper, basically using the biggest foam core sheets we could find as our card size. And then I had them printed. I spray mounted these giant ass sheets of printed material on both sides, lining them up as best I could. And then I took an X-Acto knife with a jumbo blade and cut them all out by hand, put them together, bent them the right way. In order to get them to bend, I had to kind of score the insides of some of the inside pieces of the hull. But yeah, I built all of those myself and then unbuilt them, packed the pieces flat for the guys who went to Gen Con that year. And and they put them back together there. I don't think I was at that Gen Con.
Okay. Interesting.
I think I was at that convention, but I built those ships. I made them myself.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, Tiffany thinks...
the same thing for Star Wars the first year when we went to Star Wars Celebration.
Yep, nice. Yeah, we were wondering, the community was wondering what happened to them. Tiffany thinks they may have been given away because they were hard to bring back or something, but I'm not sure.
I would not be surprised if they ended up disappearing from the convention floor. I don't know how many conventions they ever got used in. Was it only in that first one?
That I'm not sure about. We just have this one picture from 07, so...
Yeah, that was a big deal when we did that. I forget what set it was that was coming out when we did it, but
yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah, it must have been Caribbean or after that. So, because I see all the Pirates of the Caribbean like main flagships there. So nice.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll be happy to know that other people have followed in your footsteps. There was there's a picture on Board Game Geek of epic scale like big ships at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival a while back, and the Portland group called PDXR, they made some huge ones in like 2008, 9, 10, and I'm actually friends with Captain Redgoat, who led that group for a while, and he actually gave them to me last year, so I'm trying to keep that spirit alive. So epic scale is still, it's still a thing getting played outside once in a while. So
I'm so jazzed. that was fun.
Yeah,
it was fun to make them. And it was really, it was seven. I think it was a Gen Con. I think I was there. I think I was there for this one.
Nice.
So this was back when I was still able to go to conventions. So yeah.
Nice.
I think I was there. Now I need to blow up this picture and see if I'm in the background somewhere.
Yeah. Were there any theoretical ship designs impossible due to the size of the cars that the ships were produced on? Like something you wanted to go bigger?
Well, honestly, it was always easier to go bigger. It was harder to go smaller.
Okay.
We couldn't go smaller than like the one-masted sailing ships, because like you just really couldn't. You know, you were talking about how hard it was to put the two-masted junk together. Now imagine if that was a one-masted junk with the same design on like half the size.
Yeah.
You know, when you're dealing with big pieces that small, and every hole has to be 0.9 millimeters wide to handle the tab that's going into the slot. And no piece can be smaller than 2 millimeters wide, you end up with getting, like, it ends up looking kind of silly if you do it wrong. The canoe, the native canoe, little one-masted canoe boat, that had a piece that was really, really delicate, and had a cross piece that was really, really delicate. That was about as small as we could make it. That little, the outboard on the one-masted native canoe, that's about as small as you could ever get, is that little bit. So
nice.
And you can't bend that piece, it'll break.
Yeah. What was your favorite and least favorite ship design to prototype or engineer?
My favorite one to prototype was probably it's a tie between either the Squid or the Kraken. Nice. Because they were so cool, they were like pretty easy to do, and they looked really awesome, and you could kind of make them look any way you wanted, because you could intermix the pieces to give it a custom look, and I really liked those. I think the one I liked putting together the least was probably the Nautilus, again, because you had to, the submarines, because you had to have it had a bottom piece, right? So you had to bend it to match the bottom piece, and then you had to kind of bend it to match the top as well. And it was kind of a pain to put together. I really liked the Switchblade because gears are fun. I liked the Scorpion because hinges are fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't really dislike anything. The Crab was fun to put together.
Yeah. Yeah, those are definitely interesting.
I think they were all great. It was a lot of fun to work on. The Bausch one still remains one of my favorite designs that I did in Pirates.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorites for sure. Were there any ship designs that you wanted to see in the game that never made it in? Like something that couldn't work for gameplay rules or some other reason?
No, actually, surprisingly, no. They were very receptive when I would come up with a cool idea, like, hey, what about this? And they would almost always be like, oh my God, that's cool. Gimme, you know? So it was, I don't think I ever made a design for a ship that didn't get accepted.
Wow.
Because I think they were just happy to have cool new stuff. And we worked really well together. And by the time, in the later things, I was a game designer in my own right. And so I was always thinking about new mechanics in mind as I was making stuff, that hence the stuff like the hook ship and the switchblade concept and that kind of stuff. So, it was, I always had a lot of fun on these because I wasn't as heavily designed in the game design as I was in the Star Wars stuff. So it was a little bit, it was like a nice break from being in charge of something to be doing something for the Pirates team. And nice. I really do love all of them.
Yeah.
Original stuff ended up feeling so boring by the 10th set, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like back to basics, historical stuff for the most part.
Yeah, really? Another one-masted schooner? Come on, guys. But, you know, hey, there's only so many one-masted ships, right?
Yeah. Were there any ship designs that other people proposed to you, like other employees or even, like, fans of the game?
If there was, I was insulated from it.
Okay.
Like I said, I was not in charge of Pirates by any means. And so all of the outward communications and suggestions and stuff like that that came from people ended up going probably to the game design team if they made it that far. I there were always suggestions on cool things. And I'm sure that a lot of these designs came at least in large part from other people's suggestions at some point. It was a really collaborative team to work with. Like, WizKids was a family. Even at our most contentious moments, we were still a family that, you know, worked weird together, but worked together. So there was never a point in my recollection where anybody had to say a hard no to anybody else about any of this stuff. It was always like everybody wanted the coolest thing possible to do for the line. And yeah, it was always something that was, we said yes far more often than we said no.
Nice. Did you design any ship types for beyond Return to Savage Shores, like stuff that never got released?
No, Daryl was definitely the one doing the creative end of things by that point. And I was just making sure that things still fit our styrene sort of style. By that point, so that would definitely be a question for Daryl. I'm sure he had some ideas in the pipe because he was never the type to sit there and not do something that was on his mind. He works with wood now, like he's a carpenter, a woodworker and carpenter now, he's still working on doing that kind of thing, kind of like intricate, putting different pieces of things together in interesting ways. Like, it's always been in his DNA, so I'm sure he had some ideas. Because nice. It's not, you know, the end for us came rather suddenly. Like I had two sets in the can ready to go for Star Wars, so I'm betting he had some stuff ready for Pirates.
Yeah, very interesting. So that wraps up the prototyping and styrene section. We'll get into some of the graphic design specifics. So when you were making the ships in Spanish Main, they were made in Photoshop. Did you mostly looked at like historical ships and then kind of, did you have to draw out like the cannons and like the gun decks by hand?
Program? It was all by hand. It was by mouse, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, like I would often make stuff and like make a shape that I wanted in Illustrator and then put it into Photoshop and do Photoshoppy stuff to it to make it look right. I was definitely referencing a lot of historical stuff. There's a lot of really great pictures of like the USF Constitution, all sorts of old sailing ships. I had actually been to see the Vasa at the Vasa Museum.
Nice.
Several years before this when I was in Sweden. And so I had seen up close what one of these things would look like. And so I already had like a tremendous amount of the aesthetic in my head, but I was always working for references to make sure stuff looked cool. And at the first, our goal was as close to photorealistic as we could get. We just wanted them to look really cool. Like when you sit there and look at the table, we wanted people to look at it and say, that's a cool pirate ship, and not, you know, or that's a cool British ship, and not be like, that looks kind of wonky. What is that? You know, we wanted to make identifiability a thing. So realism was the way we went at first. And yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of reference, but it was all done up in Photoshop. We never slapped a photograph on the side of a ship.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was all created from scratch using a reference.
Yep. Do you know if the first print run of Spanish Main that has the faded cards used a different ink process or a different styrene? I know Shane mentioned the artwork really process is a little finicky once in a while.
Yeah, I really don't know. I know, like, we from the beginning run to the end run, I know there were vendor changes. And it would not surprise me at all if the first set was done at a different printer, a different manufacturer than the second set. Or something like that, or like the factory changed, and because like we had a business relationship with a company in China that had business relationships with factories, so we didn't at that point in our styrene that early in our styrene making career, we were working through that intermediary exclusively. So if they changed vendors from one to two, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I know we had to turnover. We had to basically change tooling from one company to another at some point. I remember doing that. I don't remember whether it was for Star Wars or for Pirates. This was a long time ago, and I'm getting old. But yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all if it was just like a different printer, a different print factory that did the printing. And so yeah, it would look different.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very surprised if a single factory changed inks or changed processes on us. It was probably just like we changed from factory A to factory B for the second print. Because the first one, I know, like, we weren't sure what size this game was going to be. We didn't know how big it was going to be. We had ideas, and so we had, you know, production. We had a production quota that we were meeting based on what we thought we could sell. So if the demand was higher and then we wanted to do a higher run and they're like, well, we can't do that, then we would have had to have changed factories.
Okay.
To get the... to meet the demand we actually generated.
Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting. Yeah, maybe Spanish Main Unlimited.
Video games are a highly speculative business, especially when you're doing something no one else has done before.
Yeah.
And we did that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you said you weren't as involved with like the collation, but do you know how long the sheets were on like the cards?
No, I really don't. For the styrene? I really don't. That was actually kind of a mystery to me. And Mike, I know Mike dealt with how the collation stuff is going to work. I suspect Shane got a good handle on that over time as production went on. But it came to the actual styrene. That because we had started out with a group that handled a lot of that stuff for us, I never really got eyes on it, and I didn't understand how any of it worked until I started working on Star Wars, and then I actually got into doing the collation schemes and stuff like that for the Star Wars game, because it was a way that we could, you know, there were efficiencies that we could use on the way the cards were. In that case, the cards were punched and not cut. Like, so it varies from game to game, and I don't really know enough about the Pirates one to be terribly informative. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's all good. Let's see. Do you know if the special edition ships that came in like the pre-constructed boxes were printed separately and then hand assembled like in Bellevue, or
yeah, I remember that. They were, if I remember correctly, they were printed separately, using the same die lines and tooling, which is why the selection of them was the same. But they were printed, they were put together and glued in China.
Yeah,
I think those pieces were assembled in China and then sent over to us. But I couldn't swear to it. I remember getting those pieces over here and it came to us in the office fully done. So I don't, unless the warehouse was doing, our warehouse team was doing something fancy, which I doubt. They could have, they were, our warehouse team was great and they did lots of custom stuff for us. So they got a bunch of pieces and had to put it together. I know, like, if there was glue involved, generally that was going to be a factory that did it. So I suspect that was mostly done at a factory, but,
yeah, that makes sense.
Like all the companies that do the styrene printing, they do lots of other things. Like the styrene stuff was one small portion of the business. Like when I went to China for the Star Wars game, they had all sorts of businesses. They made all sorts of physical, they made replica prop, like movie props. They made, like household gewgaws, all sorts of weird stuff. They had all these different, like things that they could manufacture. And they also had this weird little side business doing styrene stuff. And we just happened to be somebody, because remember, most of the time what people do with styrene is punch out cards, like credit cards or loyalty cards or, you know, badges or whatever. So it's usually a pretty run-of-the-mill, unexciting business. They loved working with us because we wanted to do neat stuff with their technology. And it was kind of a creative challenge for them. So it wouldn't surprise me if some factory took, if the factory we were working with at the time took the mass market bubble, display bubble thing as a challenge. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they were like, okay, we can do A and B, but you'll have to put it together yourself. And then our factory guys spent hours putting them together because there were only, you know, several dozen of them that went out to different stores. So it really depends on the scale. Like, I don't know. I don't remember how many there were made.
Yeah.
If it was like Target had them, or if it was just your friendly local retailer, or friendly local game stores. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I got my Davy Jones Curse special edition boxes at Target. So I think between that set and Ocean's Edge, there was definitely quite a big distribution. So that would, it wouldn't surprise me if all of them were assembled in the fact, like in China, just because of the sheer volume.
You know, might know, if you ever end up getting a chance to talk to Ray Weirs, he might know, because he was, he was, in charge of our sales group for a long time. And during, I think he was still in charge of it during, the initial pirate stuff. And I know he knew what everybody was doing. Like he really kept his finger on the pulse of what was going on. So if there is anybody other than Jordan who would like have, would remember like who did each piece, like unless you can find Rosie from the warehouse, she could tell you whether they did it or not. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard about him through Tiffany, but I didn't know if he was involved in pirates at all. So that's good to know. Awesome. Yeah. Do you know anything about?
I'm not sure how this all was by the time we got to Disney, right? Because things had been handed over, and Jordan was off doing other things and that sort of thing. But yeah, anyway, sorry I interrupted you.
Yeah, no, you're good. Do you know if the Obago Deuce was produced in like decent numbers? Because there's supposedly only like 30 to 60 out there. It's like a promo ship from Fire and Steel. It's like incredibly rare.
I was buried in Star Wars world by that point.
Okay. So yeah, that's fair.
By the time Fire and Steel came out, I wasn't even doing dialings anymore for the line. I was consulting for Daryl and making sure that that his crazy newfangled 3D ways hadn't broken anything. And
I was gonna let him do stuff. Yeah. Nice. So other than Shane Hartley or maybe Kian Ng, who else was doing graphic design after the first set? Spanish Main.
We had a whole graphic design team, which I honestly don't like. We had three or four contract designers, but most of the designers that, like, okay, so I for like 15 minutes, I was the art director while Sandra was on her maternity leave, for when she had her first child, and there was a lot of upheaval at the company right during that time. So I was not art director by the time she got back. And I had some moved over into this weird gunk work R&D team directly under Jordan. So I don't remember who worked on what within the graphic design team at that time. We did have two or three other designers. I probably have to go back and look up some names, because it's so long ago.
Yeah, I'm seeing it's from way later in the production line. The adventure book that never got released has a few names listed, like Matt McAnally, Steve Walker, Jason Story. So I don't know.
These all ring bells. So yeah, I mean it's
okay.
I know these folks. I'm not like I think I remember Matt. No, Matt McAnally worked with me at. On Arcane Legions, which we did after WizKids closed, and continued to work with Jordan. Matt worked with me there. Steve didn't work with me there, but we worked a lot together on a bunch of other stuff. So yeah, lots of really good folks in graphic design. I never severed my ties with those folks.
Yeah, awesome. A couple of random collecting questions. Do you still have your Pirate CSG stuff?
I have a couple of ammo boxes full of, I think, not blank cards, but like a bunch of unprinted pirate ships.
Oh, wow.
They're just the whites that I have in like an ammo box. Because I loved the whites, and so whenever anybody found extra extra bats of them, they would just give them to me.
Nice.
But yeah, I never really ended up getting a lot of the printed cards very often. Like we'd get full sets and of the games from time to time, and my changeover from tabletop games into video games was not an easy one, and I ended up being unemployed for like a year and a half while I was trying to make that jump that divide, and I ended up selling all of my full sets, and that included several pirate sets that I sold on eBay through a friend of mine who was running an eBay business. But all of my physical stuff is mostly gone. There's a couple of sets I've got still, but most of it was long since gone.
Yeah.
Shane, Steve, Matt, Mizuho, he did a bunch of stuff for us too.
Nice.
Jason, Andrew, Megan, Sarah Phelps. Sarah worked with us at Wells Expeditions as well, briefly.
Nice. Do you still have any prototypes or one-of-ones?
Prototypes of the ships?
The
paper one?
I guess either one, yeah.
I suspect I do. Because I those ones, I never sold anything. Like nobody was interested in buying paper cutouts of this stuff. It was not. It was a wonderful game. A lot of people loved it, which is awesome. We were far from famous.
Yeah.
I have a little, jokingly, one of the production team made me a little box with the very first printed assembled pocket model. It was the first ship we ever put together. Was the Millennium Falcon from the Star Wars game. Mm-hmm. And like somebody put that in a box for me and gave it to me as a gift. I have a little post-it on it says the very first pocket model. Nobody's ever gonna want that. So I kept all that kind of stuff that I had. Whether the pirate ships survived being bent as they are and not necessarily, like, by the time I started doing the Star Wars ones, I had, in order to pitch the set, I would have to actually assemble like a little display board full of all the models, kind of show it off and be like, okay, this is what we're doing. The sales folks would take it out and go, here's the next set, this is what it looks like. And I did those, but I never had to do those with pirates because we were, you know, full steam ahead. Everybody already knew they wanted it. So some of those, I'm sure I have some of them in a box in my attic. But I couldn't tell you exactly where they are.
Yeah.
I love keeping those. That was my favorite thing, was the whites and especially the handmade paper ones.
Nice. I'll get a lot of kind of rapid fire favorites questions. Do you have a favorite ship type to build?
To build? It's still the Bausch one.
Yeah, nice.
It's my favorite one. And it's a close second from the Switchblade. The Switchblade was a lot of fun to put together because there's something so bloody satisfying about moving one of those arms and having the other one move with it.
Yeah.
And you click it together and it works, you're just like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to stab a ship. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. It's really smooth too. Once you get it right, it's great.
Yep.
Totally. Very satisfying. Least favorite is probably the submarines, I'm thinking.
Yeah, my least favorite to put together was the submarines. It was A, it was difficult to do, and B, the top of them was serrated. So when you're trying to push down from this piece to get it in the styrene, you're stabbing yourself with a finger.
Yeah. I have that. Yeah. Yep. I have that problem with the spine that goes at the very bottom to show that it's submerged when you put that first piece on. That's like, that can be hard, actually. They're kind of tight. Yep.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite set out of all 13 released?
I think the Viking one actually is probably my favorite because it looked the most cohesive. The Frozen North.
Yep.
Because the Viking ships looked really cool, even if they were incredibly useless when it came to like arcs. Because basically, if you're coming at someone in a longship, you had one gun.
Yeah.
Right, because your side arc was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you always had to go broadside of things. So they may not have been that great to play with, but it sure as heck looked awesome. And the graphic design, Shane's team did a great job on that set in particular. Like, it was really good looking, and all the ship art was great. No, it was that one's definitely my favorite.
Nice. Do you have a favorite faction?
Honestly, I played the game so little that like I didn't really have time to develop one. Like the Jade Rebellion probably is one of my favorites just because I love the Junks. But it's like a really like did the Sea Monsters have a faction? Because if so, that's my favorite.
There were different sea creatures across a bunch of factions, but the cursed have the most.
I didn't like the cursed in general just because I'm not the undead player. I'm not the necromancer player in our D&D group. So that's never really my aesthetic. I love the squids and stuff like that, but probably the Jade Rebellion. Because it was so cool looking.
Nice. Favorite game piece, like a specific ship or crew or unique treasure. Specific ship? Yeah,
I'm partial to favorite game piece. I'm partial to Ethan Farseer. I don't know why.
Yeah.
The Baoshuan is still my favorite ship.
Nice.
Just because it got to be so freaking huge and looked awesome.
Yeah.
And I wish I could have made other bigger ships.
Nice.
And then all of the mechanized stuff from the steampunk looking stuff was always fun.
Yeah.
And those look really neat too.
Yeah. So favorite ship type, probably Time Master Junk as well, I would imagine.
Yeah. Ship type still nice. The Junk in general is my favorite ship type because it looked the most. All of the Junks looked the most like their source, just because they didn't have to have the curved sides as much.
Yeah.
So it managed to look a lot more like a Junk than the pirate ship looked like a pirate ship.
That's fair.
And the regular Three Master looked like Three Master. It also didn't have to take as many liberties with, what is a mast, stuff like that, because. You know, the more you know about sailing, the more the way we define masts makes no sense.
Yeah, agreed.
It was obviously just for game mechanic,
yeah.
And not for realism.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite terrain type, like whirlpools or reefs? I understand if there's none, just because you didn't play a lot.
I love the mechanic of Sargasso Seas.
Okay. Nice.
Those were fun.
Nice.
And that one came entirely from Mike. That was he came up with all the different cool kinds of terrain, and I thought Sargasso Seas was just a neat concept. That was when I found out what Sargasso Seas were. I was like, "What? That's a thing? Are you kidding me? That's crazy!" And Mike's like, "Yeah, yep. Look on that map."
Nice. Did you have a favorite rule or game mechanic?
The the hooking onto a ship to stop it and to grapple it with the big not the side the hook ship.
yes,
which the scorpions.
The scorpion, the scorpion okay.
Hook. I love the mechanic built around that. That was fun.
Yeah.
Like I ran you, I hit you with this thing, now you're stuck, you can't get away.
Yep.
Boarding time.
Nice. Do you have any least favorite sets or game pieces?
Oh no, I'm not gonna do that. honestly, retrospect, the first set I liked the least because it had the least variety and cool stuff, but I still love it because it's the first set, you know?
Yeah.
I love everything we did with this game. I was enamored with the fact that we got to go play in Disney's park for a little while. That was awesome. I know we got some criticism from some people who were like, "No, keep it away from the mouse" or whatever, but I just thought I was just, you know, squee that we got to have all these different characters from Pirates of the Caribbean in our game at all. It was just such a cool thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a perfect fit, basically.
Yeah. I never got to meet any of them or got to do any fantasy stuff with them or anything like that. It was all after the fact.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Battlestar Galactica where we had to do a set visit and meet actors or anything like that. It was, we were strictly fans making fan stuff that just, we got permission to print. It was just such a good fit. Like, once we did, we're like, well, how come they didn't let us do this a long time ago?
Yeah. Nice. Did you have any ideas that never made it into the game? Like, I know you said you were able to do all the ship types, but whether it was like a set or faction or something about?
I got everything I wanted into the game and then some, because this was the one that we got to say yes to a lot. And because it was the first place where we got to do this kind of weird stuff. And I was so much in charge of the physical design, like, and I had already divorced myself so much from the graphic design because I was in love with doing the dyes But I really didn't like having to do the layouts. At that point, I had gotten over myself with the graphic design stuff, and I was very happy to have a more capable and more enthusiastic team take care of that for me. I got to do everything I wanted with the game, and probably more, because I was really stretching at the end of my tenure in it to come up with new ideas. Being able to do mechanical stuff, like, that was a new set of interesting things, but I was also super busy coming up with, you know, digesting all this new stuff from what then was the new animated series Clone Wars, and, you know, working on different ship designs there. And so my plate was pretty full coming up with an entire other game set. So I was just happy it was continuing to go interestingly without me. It's just a great line. So much fun to see. I love the turtle ship. That was a great one that we got to do. With those little armored plates. Looked really cute.
Yep. Nice. Did you have any input on how your crew, Ethan the Far Seeker, was eliminated, or was that all Mike Mulvo?
No, it was all Mike. Mike got to do neat little homages to everybody. Ironically, the art for Ethan Far Seeker looks absolutely nothing like me. unlike Tiffany's character, who looks just like her, Shayna's, who could practically be a selfie. Shayna Dew was Shayna Doors.
Yep.
Alter ego, and looks exactly like her. Mine doesn't look particularly like me, but that's okay.
Nice.
It was I got a cool piece in the game.
Yeah.
It's funny. After we did the first set, Jordan, like, as a thanks for everybody who busted their butts to make this thing happen, he made he and his wife went out and got little frames, and made little framed, basically, thank you gifts for everybody. It was just like, everybody had a pirate. They made pirate names for everybody, and they put like a little fake gold doubloon in the frame with the name of the person. Like they called me Bloodshot Ethan, because I had spent so many late nights at the office. nobody could beat Kathy's name. Kathy Brigg, one of our graphic designers, who was around for the first set. Her name was Kathy Brigg. She got the best pirate name of all, Catwalk Kathy Brigg. Nice. It worked perfectly. The fact that she was this tall model shaped young lady worked perfectly for the name. Everybody got really cool little pirate names and cool stuff.
Nice.
I still have that on my shelf.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you got to be part of the Viking faction, which is one of your favorite ship designs, with the long ship. So it works out pretty well. Right. Nice.
See, they knew what I liked.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember the last time you played Pirate CSG?
Oh, it was probably when we first made the big ships and we were playing around with them. I think that was probably the last time I played it.
Nice. Yeah, probably like 2007, 2008, I'm thinking.
Yeah, something like that.
Estimate, yeah. What are your favorite memories of the game? Doesn't have to be gameplay. Yeah.
Trying to think. One of my favorite memories was making those ginormous ships. It took me a couple of weeks to do it, because I was doing it in and amongst all my normal duties, all the other stuff I had to do day to day. But making those ships was a lot of fun. Seeing them get big and still look cool really made me feel good about how we had designed them. made me feel good about the designs. Honestly, just like putting the first white proof cutout, proof copies back from the first set, getting them and actually punching out the styrene pieces and putting them together, and it worked. That was a absolute eureka, like, celebration moment for me, because I had spent so much time doing this completely experimental thing that nobody had done before. The entire game rested on me having done my job right. If it didn't put together the way we thought it would, people would boo us and they would throw cabbage at me. Like, I've always had a bad case of imposter syndrome, and that was like, it was at its height at that point in my career. But having them all click together and look cool and work was just this huge relief. And it really kind of made me feel good about my life choices up to that point.
Yep.
That's probably one of my favorite Pirates moments.
Nice. Is there anything you would have changed in hindsight?
I would have done bigger cards sooner.
Yep.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I would have done, because it would have allowed us to do some more interesting things, to have made pieces that were bigger and easier for people to handle. I don't know if it would have gotten into stores if we had started with big cards, because collectible card games were a thing. Collectible big card games were not a thing. So nobody had physical infrastructure. Nobody had the physical infrastructure for selling large card packs, you know? Like, your friendly local game store had things that were set up to put different cards and different card packs and line them up and have them facing out so that people could select what they wanted. They didn't have anything like that for big cards. So we couldn't have gone too early. Like, we couldn't have launched with big cards. I think we probably would have, that would have been more hurt than help. But, you know, by like the third set, maybe we could have started getting into big cards. That might have behooved us. But there were so many reasons why we couldn't do that, that it's not like I regret not doing it. It's just, I wish we had realized it was an option earlier, maybe been able to plan for it from the very, very beginning. But so much of this game was like, we were shooting from the hip. We had no idea whether this whole idea was going to work or not. Like, we loved the fact that you could buy miniatures in a flat card pack. That was awesome. We thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
Were the players going to think it was cool? I don't know. You know, that was totally like, we had fingers crossed that all of our marketing and sales efforts were going to make sure that it did, and it worked.
Yeah. Awesome.
I don't have any regrets from the game, other than, you know, not getting to continue making it after 2008.
Yeah. Nice. How did you get out of Pirates?
How'd I get out of it?
Yeah.
I got laid off.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I was already transitioning out of working on Pirates by the time the whole Tornante debacle happened, and WizKids was shuttered. I was already pretty much out of it. Daryl had taken over my styrene duties, and I was just an advisory voice in the room at that point. I had gotten out of it because I had started doing the Star Wars game. Yep. That game was my design, from, you know, white sheet to styrene cutouts to card art and everything.
Nice.
So that was very much like my, I had grown into that role and had taken that over as my main duties.
Yep. Makes sense. Do you think the game has a chance?
Mainly because everybody got laid off and we all had to go find new jobs.
Yeah. Do you think the game has a chance to come back in the future?
No, 10 years ago, I would have said, nope, no way, you know, but who knows? I mean, WizKids has resurfaced and sort of reinvented itself like a phoenix. And I think that's awesome. And if they were to decide to go back down the styrene route, like, they'd probably have to start from scratch. I doubt the companies that made the game in the first place are still in businesses, the same businesses that they were. So they'd have to come up with whole new tooling methods. But I am sure that if they wanted to, they could. If they saw a market for it, if it was something that they thought they could do. But I don't think it's likely. The WizKids Reborn out in New Jersey, they definitely are focused on their core businesses, and if they ever decided to go down that route, I think it would be great if they tried to do it, but I certainly wouldn't blame them for not. It was a risky enterprise back in 2003. Given the changes in the tabletop market these days, it might be even riskier prospect now.
Yeah, makes sense. Do you think the game could work as a living card game or like a non-collectible game?
I don't know. Almost any game, we did a little board game version of it, right? The mass market board game version that just had a fixed set of ships and a fixed board on a map. So mechanically, from a game design perspective, it could totally work as a standalone non-collectible game. Whether it could work as a business model, I don't know. Like I said, the tooling was very expensive. That was one of the big drawbacks of styrene, is that it was not cheap to make the pieces. So you had to make sure that you could recycle the pieces as much as you could. Each die had to go as far as you possibly could stretch it. Otherwise, it would end up costing you more than it made you. So one of the only ways to make that work is to have a collectible model where you can produce large amounts of these pieces to where the costs break down well, to where you're making money on every pack that you sell. It is very easy to produce too little and not make any money on your product. tabletop. I've been involved in non-collectible games since then. I did the Star Trek Fleet Captains game with WizKids, and that was not collectible. It was strictly the box has everything you want in it. Boom, that was the set. And they would do expansion sets down the road for more minis. But that works. It's more of a board game model. It's a different kind of business. It certainly isn't printing money the way Wizards of the Coast gets to, right?
Yeah.
Non-collectible models are harder to sustain long-term because, unless you happen upon a hit mechanic, like the drafting games that you can find 17 different versions of in your friendly local game store today that are all, based off those early ones that came out, 10 years ago or so. Unless you come up with something that is something that you can reskin over and over again and keep selling pieces of, it's hard to have one thing go very far in a business model. RPGs get to do the collectability thing by continuing to produce more books, by deciding to make a second edition, that kind of thing. I can't really do that with a board game or something like that. And honestly, if you're making a board game with ships in it, I don't know if the styrene buildable pieces are your most fun way to go. Like, you have the ability to do actual cool little ship models at that point. The collectible thing, I think, makes it work.
Yeah, that's a good point. What distribution or packaging method do you think would be optimal if the game came back in stores today? Like sealed packs or like boxes or tins or?
Probably a combination. You want to, like, the collectible packs are important. Like I said, to a collectible business model, being able to buy booster packs, being able to have those booster packs be small so the retailers don't have to dedicate huge amounts of shelf space to sell your product. Make them relatively lightweight so that they're not ridiculously expensive to ship. All of the various logistical reasons that card packs are a good idea still hold true here. Given my design for the Star Wars game, I might want to incorporate more paper cards into it, just because that introduces another collectible model that is less expensive to produce and stretches your physical product even further, right? Being able to have different things you want to collect, including ships, but not limited to ships, is awesome. Like, the different islands that were in there is something some people did want to end up collecting. Having different crew that you could assign that are in a card format makes it easier to produce them. Little stuff like that, but I was always pretty satisfied with its format. The other thing that I could have taken away from Star Wars, looking back on redoing Pirates, would be to have bigger cards, because the Star Wars game got to have bigger cards, and by that point it was okay and it was fine. So I think these days you could manage to do double size cards for the ships and it would be fine.
Interesting. Yeah. Some people in the community have talked about making the non-ship stuff cardboard or paper, like crew and even coins and unique treasures as well, not just the islands, to save money on like the styrene and tooling costs potentially. So
The paper stuff was never what was most expensive, and the difference between printing something on a paper card and printing it on cardboard is not insignificant, but when you're dealing with the cost involved of styrene, it's less significant. I think that's why they went with the cardboard, because they wanted to make sure when you're marketing a game, you want to make sure that your components have enough perceived value that the player who opens a pack feels like they're getting the money's worth. So if you've got a coin that is paper thin, and when you've got a little paper thin thing like that, it's going to curve a little bit, so it's never going to sit flat. Versus an actual cardboard coin that actually, at least has some thickness to it. You can kind of take a bunch of them and pour them around from hand to hand. That has a much better feel, has a little higher perceived value than the paper version of that would. So I probably wouldn't go down that route for the coins, because the cardboard coins are just cool. But and there's also the play feasibility. Like, if I were doing a board game version of it, we'd have like 3D islands, stuff like that, because you can totally print those you can make those these days much less expensive than they used to be because technology's improved. As long as your physical main product is made in styrene with these styrene punch out cards, there's enough of a base level of expense in the production costs that anything you're cutting down on around the edges is just trying to fix your margin to where you can make money off of it. The main cost is going to be in your styrene.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's way less expensive on a per unit basis than doing minis is. So, like, there's a big benefit in that. It was one of the reasons that we were interested in styrene games to begin with, right? Because minis games are really expensive to do pre-painted minis. And cutting costs on pre-painted minis is really obvious and never good.
Yep, that makes sense.
Like, oh, look, all of my guys have bendy swords, and the paint jobs weren't. We could only use 6 colors or something. Like, there's so many limitations in that. And now that you can do 3D printed colored stuff, like, it gets even weirder because there's new technology that makes it somewhat more less expensive, somewhat more expensive, depending on how you do it. I don't know if the styrene costs of styrene doing styrene would have come down much by now.
Yeah.
Over the past 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Oh, God, interesting. 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Next year will be anniversary of the first set coming out. Yep.
Oh, my God. I'm old.
I mean, I feel old now, too, because I was playing it still back then. So nice. Do you think the game would have any chance of coming back as a digital or virtual game?
Totally. It actually did once, I think.
Yeah, there was the... Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. I forget what it was called.
Yeah, it was like a Sony Online Entertainment version.
Yeah, so we did. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So we did it. And they did a version of it that used the exact same mechanics. And it actually just sort of made the ships in 3D. I remember consulting with them on it.
Okay. Interesting.
Sending images and stuff. It works that way. I don't know if you ever played Crimson Steam Pirates, the game that Harebrained Schemes did on mobile, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. It was Jordan's company, so obviously the mechanics were different, but similar because the same brain was involved that was involved in Pirates. And so it felt very similar. It was different. I mean, you're dragging stuff, dragging the ships because they have the movement and turning arcs and stuff like that are determined by your ship. But it still had very similar mechanics of the turn-based thing and how it worked. It would totally work as a digital game. How you would do collectability, I have no idea. You'd be able to do a lot more variety. I honestly don't know the advantage that you get from mimicking the styrene cutout.
That's fair.
Because the fun of the styrene is putting it together and punching it out and all that kind of stuff, and for some people being able to punch it back in. I know that some people thought that was really cool, but like it mystified me that SOE game wanted to do the styrene ships as styrene ships instead of as the inspiration for the styrene ships, because you have a full 3D rendering engine. Why not? Like, I get it, it's fewer polys, so that maybe that's a good benefit when you have limited resources. You can do a lot more with styrene and textures, with flat pieces and textures than you can with high poly models. But, it's like I've never really understood the whole digital card game thing. I'm like, once you're digital, why bother with cards?
Yeah. The
monsters you collect, right? Like, I never got into the digital card games because of that same concept.
Yeah, I don't know if it's partly to maintain familiarity with the existing player base. So it's not like a too big of a jump, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. Maybe it was just easier for them back in the day to kind of mock up what it would look like on a computer versus trying to go with a whole new ship.
The importance of efficiency and graphics.
Yep.
So like having flat surfaces is way easier to deal with from a rendering perspective than having, multi-poly sails that billow and have animations and stuff. So yeah. I get that there's a lot of efficiency there. They were tapping, like you said, they're tapping into an existing player base that would be, might be interested in it because it looks like their game. I know there's a lot of reasons why you would do that. But I always find myself when playing something like that, wishing it weren't two-dimensional.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, some of the existing members of the current Pirates community are working on some like digital rendering of like the ships. I'll send you that after. It looks pretty cool so far.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yep.
But that's the thing. When you're trying to resurrect something that you love, it totally makes sense to do it faithful to the original in terms of like how it to make it look like the original thing that you're referencing. So that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Like if I were to be given the chance to do the Star Wars pocket model stuff again, like to continue doing that in some digital form, I'd probably still do it like little pocket models because they were cute. Yeah. They were fun. They were an interesting take. It was fun to put together a little model. They're like Legos, only with extremely specialized pieces.
Yeah.
I get my cousin, my little cousin, when we first started making the Pirates. A lot of my Pirates product went to my cousins, by the way. They lived in Seattle, in Bellevue rather, and so I gave a lot of my product to them. But they had a lot of fun kit bashing shit. They would mix and match stuff, and just they treated them like Legos, and they would just screw around and put goofy, masks on sideways and in different places, and pointing the wrong directions, and doing all sorts of funky stuff. There were some once the Sea Monster stuff came out, there were a lot of really interesting ships that had tentacles coming off of them.
Yep. Yeah, myself and some other people have done that. Usually, sometimes it happens when you have mismatched ships, like from somebody's old collection, and they played with it as a kid, so then stuff broke, and then other stuff got mixed up, or like mispacks where you have like two of one card instead of two different ones to make a ship, so then you have like extra mass, but you can't complete a ship, so then you make like this. So then you make some amalgamation of craziness that looks like some ship out of hell or whatever. So yeah, it's pretty funny. If Pirates CSG came back, would you want to return to it?
I'm in my third career since then. Like, I started when Pirates came in as a graphic designer. I slid into game design because of Pirates and became a game designer. And then I slid into video game design from tabletop game design. And then I slid from video game design into data analysis. So, like, I would absolutely love to be involved in the project. I can't say the level to which I would want to do the actual day-to-day work. Or the level to which I would want to actually be the one doing all the styrene cutouts and stuff like that. I would be very interested to hear the pitch and to talk to the people doing it and to see if there was anything I could do to be involved. Yeah, I would.
Nice.
Took me a second to get there, but yeah, I think I want to be involved.
Nice. If you were trying to bring the game back now with its current situation, what would you do? Like, if you were in charge of it, given like the legal situation and
I have a question about legal situation. Is there something going on? I don't know.
Not necessarily. It's just like WizKids holds all the intellectual property, as far as I know.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
You mean like if WizKids approached me and said, "Hey, carte blanche, we want to relaunch Pirates. What would you do?" Like that kind of a hypothetical.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I would start by trying to find a factory that still does this stuff and find a factory that would be interested in working, because you'd have to make your tooling all over again. So I would start thinking of it from the perspective of how can we produce this? And once we have a feasible how do you produce this, then the question is, what can we do with that production scheme? So, all right, if the economical way to do this is packs that have X number of cards, all right, how do we split up X number of cards to make it an interesting thing? What can we put in the pack besides those styrene cards that'll make the game interesting? Is there any cardboard stuff we can put in there? Like, what other kinds of things can we do to make this interesting? I would definitely approach it from that perspective, from the production first perspective. Because it was something that I figured out when we were working on Star Wars. When I went to visit the factory, I finally saw how they were doing cards. And rather than, we had always assumed, because the guy who was working on Star Wars with me, Mike Elliott, came from Wizards, and Wizards had always done their card printing a particular way. And, like, in his mind, there was only one way to do it. It was these card slitters that, like, had these big sheets, and it slipped the cards and then cut the corners and then put them in a pile.
Well, this one, they were using a punch. They're literally punching out six cards at a time and sweeping them off the table. And then moving the next piece of the sheet, cutting that, doing a die cut, sweep them off the table, die cut, sweep them off the table. Well, that gave us some really good ways to do randomization. Because now, instead of doing what Wizards would have done, or doing our own weird, come up with something from scratch to try to randomize the cards, why don't we just do randomization, like have 8-card packs or 7-card packs or whatever the number is, and then we just arrange the different collations in these 6-card rows, and then however they get sloughed off into this pile, and it's the randomization. So that way you don't have to have anybody randomizing anything by hand. Like, it saved us a lot of money on figuring out maybe how to produce those sets. So those kind of efficiencies really do a good job of driving everything from the how the business model works to how the basic game mechanics work, of what you get out of a pack. Because what you get out of a pack has to be something that's playable, right? You can't have a thing, oh, it requires 10 packs to play. Oh, that's no fun. You can do a starter, right? Starters work.
Yeah. It's
kind of the traditional starter and booster sort of set. You want to make sure that you can get people involved with as little of an investment as possible. Have as most fun for as little money as you can manage. So I'd really try to approach it from that and try to figure out how to arrange the business product like it. I probably wouldn't change much about how the game worked. I might be more interested in figuring out how to get prettier set dressing so there's more interesting and varied terrain and islands and all that cool kind of stuff so that it looks even cooler on the table than it already did. I might look at using bigger cards so that the ships aren't necessarily always as small. And so that you can basically punch everything off of one card for one ship. Stuff like that. But I certainly wouldn't change the core mechanics of the game. I think Mike and company knocked that out of the park. And the fact that I'm being interviewed for a podcast at the moment about the game really proves that out. So.
Yeah, makes sense. Love it. So what are you doing now? You said data.
I was a game designer for a long time. I was a video game designer. And more recently, I've gone into data analysis. So I work at Microsoft in the casual games team. And we make Solitaire and Mahjong and Minesweeper and all those the games that you can find pre-installed on Windows.
nice.
I work on those. For the first 8 years I worked for the team, I was making all the daily challenges myself. More recently I slid into doing data analysis and I've handed off my content creation duties. But yeah, I analyze data and I write queries and do sorts of fun, funky stuff like that. It's more fun than this, I promise.
yeah, nice. If you want people to find your stuff or follow you online, where can they find you?
I don't know that anybody's going to want to follow me online. On Facebook as myself. Don't make it weird. I have some friends from the old days who were people I met at conventions and stuff, who I'm still friends with on Facebook. I'm pretty approachable. LinkedIn is for work. And I'm really not on anything else. I never did have a Twitter before it was X. Pretty much only up there on Facebook.
Awesome. Anything that you want to promote or give a shout out to?
Oh, goodness. Trying to think. If you like the minds behind all these games, like follow the stuff, follow the game makers, follow the Mike Novahills and the Shane Hartleys. Go play Lorcana. Shane worked his butt off for that game. And several other people, I can never keep track of exactly who's on his team, but they played that, they all made that, so, look up some Lorcana. For my own play pattern, play Starfield, it's great. I've killed 200 hours with that so far, and I'm probably going to kill 200 more here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, what's it called again?
Starfield.
Okay.
The new space video game from Bethesda.
Nice.
But in terms of this kind of stuff, follow the game makers. Play Ravensburger games. Play Lorcana. Look on BoardGameGeek at the games that you love. Look at the people who made them. Find out what else they made. Play that. That's how you find A, more mechanics like the ones you like, and B, you support the people who made the mechanics that you like.
Yep.
That's what I would shout out for.
Yep. Love it. All right. So lastly, we always do a questions of the day segment at the end, so you can come up with one if you'd like. My one for the audience for this podcast relates back to the styrene part, because that was the focus for most of the discussion. For the audience, what's your favorite ship type to build and why? And then you can come up with one if you'd like.
What is your favorite ship type to look at and why?
Nice.
Because I had more to do with that than you've already got the build covered. And I know sometimes the ones that you like to look at are the ones you hate to build. So
I'd love
to hear which ones you guys like the look of the best.
Nice. Yeah, I like it.
When they were fully assembled.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again for coming on, Ethan. This was amazing.
Absolutely, man. Ethan, it was fun.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Miraculously, I somehow didn't drop any F-bombs. So.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This was Pirate CSG podcast number 63, and we'll see you in the next episode.